So as you all know, we are in the month of Damodar, auspicious month of Damodar. And earlier, we sang the Damodar Astaka and offered lamps to Lord Damodar. I will speak on just one verse in brief, the seventh verse. Kuverat majo bhatha murtyai vayasvat payam mochito bhakti bhajo krito cha tata prema bhaktim sukham me prayacha namokshe grahome sthidamo dareha. O Lord Damodar, in your form as a baby, Mother Yashoda bound you to a grinding stone with a rope for tying cows. You then freed the sons of Kuvera, Manigriva and Nalakuvara, who were cursed to stand as trees. And you gave them the chance to become your devotees.
Please bless me in the same way. I have no desire for liberation into your devotees. Although this is one verse,
summarizes some pastimes of Lord Krishna that are described in several chapters of Srimad Bhagavatam. But in brief, Manigriva and Nalakuvara were enjoying in a celestial lake with heavenly damsels, and their spiritual master Narada Muni happened to come to the place, but they were so intoxicated that they did not show him any respect. The ladies at least had some shame and covered themselves, but the two brothers, the sons of Kuvera, the treasurer of the demigods, were so intoxicated and so puffed up with false prestige that they did not offer any respect even to their own spiritual master. So Narada cursed them to take birth as trees. All of us living entities have different bodies which are just suitable for our desires. So Manigriva Nalakuvara, they wanted to be naked. They thought they were very handsome. So they were given the birth of trees, because trees can stand naked and can think that they're very beautiful, and people admire trees. Oh, it's a beautiful tree. But Vaishnavas are always merciful, just as Krishna is absolute. So Vaishnavas also function on the absolute platform, and therefore the curse of a Vaishnava is as good as a blessing. So while Narada cursed them to take birth as trees, he arranged for them to take birth as trees in the courtyard of the house of Nanda and Yashoda. And when baby Krishna was bound by ropes and tied to a grinding mortar, he crawled between these two trees, and the mortar lodged between the two trees, and this little baby just kept crawling, and the mortar pulled down these two trees, and out of the two trees came the brilliant forms of two demigods. Nala Kuvara and Manigriva had emerged in their original forms as demigods. And they offered many nice prayers to Lord Krishna. They regretted their misbehavior and the false pride that led them to misbehave. They had been very proud of their opulence and very inclined to enjoy their wealth, immense wealth, as sons of Kuvera. But they realized that their wealth was actually a curse, because it bewildered them, so that they forgot their actual positions. And in their intoxicated state, intoxicated with pride and false prestige, they offended their spiritual master. So in their prayers, they express their feeling that wealth was actually a curse. It was actually an impediment to progressive life, because being proud, they neglected the presence of a great saintly person. And our advancement in spiritual life depends on the association of devotees, and proud people don't get much chance to associate with devotees. In the traditional system, saintly persons would go to the homes of householders to beg alms. They actually were not in need of anything, but they just went to the householders to create an opportunity to speak to them about the real values of life, the real purpose of human life. But very rich people, they don't like to entertain beggars or sadhus. And thus they miss the opportunity for the association that would actually help them. Of course, I'm going to tell a little anecdote about someone who has become a great devotee. But at the time that I first visited his office in Bombay, he had a sign posted at the entrance, no sadhus allowed. He was a very wealthy man, highly educated, had a PhD, and then he had posted a sign, no sadhus. Well, fortunately or unfortunately, I didn't see the sign. So, you know, I took my seat. And especially with these very big people, anyone, but especially with very big people, I had to be very patient. Because, you know, they were cultured people. They didn't want to commit any offense by telling me to go. But they would just wait, thinking that if they didn't call me, eventually I would get tired of waiting and leave. But I was very patient. I would just sit and chant. And it became a sort of a war of attrition, because eventually, you know, it would get late, the office hours would end, the staff would go home, they'd get hungry, they'd want to go home and have dinner. And it's normal when someone comes, they sit near the door. That's where you keep people at a distance. You keep them near the door. But they would have to go out through the door where I was sitting. So it was like that. It was getting later and later. Almost all the staff went home, and this person, he got the idea I wasn't going to leave. So, anyway, we met, eventually became a very good devotee. But that's the tendency that these sons of Kuvera mention, that people who are intoxicated with material opulence, they feel they don't need the association of devotees. They keep the devotees at a distance, thinking they're beggars or whatever. So something that we might consider to be an advantage materially could actually be a disadvantage spiritually. And this is very common. I recently heard Srila Prabhupada speak on a verse from the Bhagavad Gita. Chapter 1, text 30. And in this verse, Arjuna uses the word viparitani, which means just the opposite. In the context of the battle of Kurukshetra, Arjuna had asked Krishna to draw his chariot between the two armies so he could see who was on the other side. Now, generally, in a war, you expect the other side to consist of forces who are against your family and friends. But what Arjuna saw were family and friends, and elders and teachers. So Viparitani was just the opposite. He wasn't seeing people who were a threat to his family and friends, but he was seeing his own family and friends ready to fight with him. So Viparitani was just the opposite of what you would expect. And also, the idea was he would fight, he would win his kingdom, and be happy. But Viparitani, he was seeing just the opposite, that he was not going to be happy. Because people want to be wealthy, they want to be opulent, so they can show their friends and relatives. Prabhupada said this is the psychology, and we know it also. People want to be rich so they can show off to their friends and relatives. Look how rich I am. Look what a big house I have. Look what a nice car I have. Look what a good position I have. So without friends and relatives, what is the fun of being rich? There's no actual pleasure from material things. The pleasure comes from impressing your friends and relatives. Otherwise, it's just a bunch of steel and stone, dead material things. So, Viparitani. Krishna was urging Arjuna to fight and kill the enemy and reclaim his kingdom. And you would think, oh, I'm going to become the king, I'll be very happy. But he was seeing just the opposite, that he wasn't going to be happy because he would have no family and friends to enjoy the kingdom with. So this happens. This happens all the time. Srila Prabhupada used to quote maybe a Bengali saying that I constructed a nice house so that I could live happily in the house with my family. But unfortunately, the house caught fire and burned to ashes. So we construct so many things in our lives to be happy. But Viparitani, just the opposite happens. We begin in a very happy mood, whatever it is. And then something happens, Viparitani, it becomes the opposite. Becomes a nightmare. We thought it was going to be a dream, became a nightmare. So, in this case of Manigriva Nalakuvara, they were enjoying with celestial women and heavenly gardens, but they committed an offense and as a result they were cursed to take birth as trees. So from the material point of view, it was just the opposite. They thought they were going to enjoy, but just the opposite. They got cursed to stand as trees. And standing as a tree is very miserable, because you never get to rest. You have to stand up all the time. Any of us would find that difficult. Standing, you don't get to rest. It's a very painful existence. So just the opposite. But there was another reversal. There was another reversal. That curse, which had them standing as trees in a very miserable condition, became a blessing, because they were liberated from their miserable condition by Krishna. And they were given the chance to become his devotees, pure devotees. It's a much higher position than being a demigod. Demigods are mundane, and although they have opulence, but they're always in anxiety. That's also the nature of wealth. Well, it's a source of anxiety both ways. If you don't have it, you're in anxiety how to get it, and if you do have it, you're in anxiety how to keep it. On one walk in Juhu Beach, Srila Prabhupada quoted Chanakya Pandit that money is simply problematic. If you have it, if you don't have it, it's a problem, because you need to get it. And if you get it, it's a problem because you have to protect it. You have to keep it. And if you lose it, that's another problem. So at all phases, it's a problem. So the demigods are very rich, very opulent, but they're also in anxiety, just like everyone else. They're in anxiety that someone may come and take my wealth, someone may come and take my position. Even Indra, the king of heaven, he's also in anxiety. If some sage is doing severe penances and austerities, he becomes fearful that, oh, he may become so powerful that he will threaten my position. Or if a king does many sacrifices, he'll become anxious. Or if he does too many sacrifices, he'll become more powerful than I am. He may become a threat. So the real solution to all problems of life, real happiness, comes when one surrenders to Krishna and engages in pure devotional service. And therefore the author of the Damodar Astakam prays to Krishna, to Lord Damodar, that just as you delivered the two sons of Kuvera and gave them the chance to become your devotees, I also pray that you will give me prema bhakti. And then they say, we do not desire any kind of liberation. Because that's also a selfish desire. Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kami Sakala Ashanta Krishna Bhakta Nishkam Ata Eva Shanta. That ordinary materialists who want material opulence and enjoyment and impersonal speculators who want liberation and yogis who want to enjoy mystic powers, none of them is peaceful because they all have selfish desires. Only a pure devotee of Krishna has no selfish desires, and therefore only he is peaceful. And without peace, where is the question of happiness? If you're always disturbed, always fearful, always anxious, how can you be happy? So the position of a devotee is the best position. And being cursed by Narada, the two sons of Kuvera ultimately were blessed to become devotees of Krishna. And so the author of the Damodarastaka prays to Lord Damodar that in the same way, please deliver me. We're all, in a way, cursed to inhabit some material body, external material body, that is very different from our original forms and natures. So we also want to be delivered. Well, that's another point. But ultimately, we want to be delivered from the false ego, that I'm the body, I'm the enjoyer, I'm the controller, I'm the proprietor. Not to be liberated from the body as such, because even within the body one can be liberated. If he is in pure devotional service. But even though a pure devotee doesn't desire liberation, but Krishna, to give the devotee an opportunity to render direct service to him, may give him one of the kinds of liberation that can be a facility for devotional service. Not merging, not the impersonal liberation of merging, but living on the same planet as the Lord, living near the Lord, having the same features as the Lord, and having similar opulence to the Lord. In those positions, a devotee can serve the Lord and be happy. So this is a very auspicious month. Our spiritual practices bring greater results in the month of Damodar Kartik. It's good. We have all gathered to chant the holy names. So we should fill our days and nights with as much hearing and chanting and devotional service as possible. Take the opportunity. It's a natural opportunity to have one's consciousness elevated, and take the momentum that we develop in the month of Kartik and let it carry us through the rest of a year in an elevated state of consciousness with good sadhana, good service attitude, and lots of association with devotees and chanting, dancing, feasting, and philosophy. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments? Back to the kirtan. Yes, Hemal.
Behave properly, or, you know, act favorably. So, can you expand that point?
What do you think?
I mean, I think we need to behave properly. And
yeah, I mean, if we're going to the temple to associate with devotees, it really means we're going to associate with the process of chanting and hearing about Krishna. That's what association means. Yeah, I mean, if we go with some mundane intention, then we won't really get this the full benefit. One can still get some benefit, but not the real benefit that comes from hearing submissively and chanting and serving humbly. Yes. Good, very good question and answer. Yes, Sukumar.
How should the devotees reciprocate?
You're on the path of progress, and new people come to the temple, and they're just beginning, like you were 5 years earlier. So you feel you should help them, but you're not confident that you have enough knowledge to help them? Is that
confidence? And also, I don't feel that it doesn't feel come naturally. I don't want to do something wrong to maybe even tell them something that they may get offended and not come to the temple. You know, there are many things that go with it.
Well, we're talking about the new person, what his consciousness is, and we're talking about the devotee, what his consciousness is, and it would vary. But there's a point here. There's a point, which is that someone who's neophyte may not understand how to deal properly with people, so he might actually have a negative effect on the person. So I think it's you should probably work under the guidance of some mature, experienced devotee who can sort of advise you as to what is appropriate for you to do or not do. This is true. If someone is really you have to know how to deal with people, and that comes with spiritual maturity. It might be better not to say too much. But you could bring the person to someone who's mature, like you see this person. If you see he wants to learn more, you could bring him to someone more qualified who can speak to him. Yes.
Maharaji, how to work against the false ego? It comes very easily. So how to?
Well, false ego is ignorance. It's like you're ignorant of your actual identity. Therefore, we have the Bhagavad Gita, so that you can hear and study and learn and give up this false identification with the body. It's a matter of hearing. But that's the grossest ignorance, to think you're the body. That's animal platform. Like Prabhupada said, if you know, a dog is thinking I'm a bulldog and a man is thinking I'm an Englishman, what's the difference? So to identify with the body, it's animal life, it's not human life. So therefore we have the Bhagavad Gita to elevate us from that, from the platform of ignorance to the platform of knowledge. I mean, it may be that you have theoretical knowledge, that you're not the body, but you haven't taken it into your heart, which is another but if you know you're not the body, if you know this, you're the soul within the body, and that your real relationship is with the Supreme Soul and not with things related to the body, then you should change your life. You know, and especially chanting and hearing and worshipping the deities, these will help you come out of the bodily concept. They'll like confirm your identity as a soul, not the body. Srila Prabhupada gives the example that a person has a disease, he has a fever, and so the fever comes down to normal, but unless the person gets out of bed and engages in normal activities, you can't really say he's cured. So the materialists have high fever of material desire and material activity. And then the impersonalists, they try to bring the fever down. But unless they engage in normal activities or healthy activities, which means devotional service, can't really say they're cured, even if their temperature has come down. It's like someone's in bed, his temperature comes down, but if he remains in bed, he can't say he's cured or normal. So if you really do have knowledge that you're not the body or the soul, and really believe it, then you will act accordingly. You can't say I'm not the body and then act on the material platform.
I think okay, I'm a soul, but when I'm dealing with all those people, it's very difficult, you know, the way they work and everything. So how do we, you know, kind of maintain ourselves in this situation?
Well, associating with materialistic people is a hardship. There's no way around it. It is a hardship. But then to help you, you should associate with devotees as much as possible. That's the way they are. They're mundane. They're thinking, they're acting, their speech, everything about them is pretty mundane. So you should, you know, just rush, you know, to the association of devotees. And of course, that association could come through vani. I mean, if you can have personal association, that's best, but otherwise, again, associating with the process of hearing and chanting. Be polite to them, but don't get too involved with them. Do what you have to maintain normal relations at work, but don't get too much into what they think about, what they talk about, what they eat, what they do for fun.